guys actually enjoy treating your customers like pieces of shit, because that's how I felt when I went to the Alamo Draft House. Okay? You know what? I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to text in your little crappy-ass theater. It was too fucking dark in that place for me to find my seat, all right? I was using my phone as a flashlight to get to my fucking seat. So excuse me for using my phone in USA, United States of America, where you are free to text in a theater. I was not aware that I couldn't text in your theater, all right? I've texted in all the other theaters in Austin, and no one ever gave a fuck about what me I was doing with my fucking phone, all right? And it was on silent. It wasn't on loud. It wasn't bothering anybody. You guys, obviously, were being assholes to me, and I'm sure that's what you do, you know, to rip people off. You take my money, and then you throw me out, you know? I will never be coming back to your Alamo Draft House or whatever. I'd rather go to a regular theater where people are actually polite. And, it, you know, I'm going to tell everyone about how shitty you are. And I'm pretty sure you guys are being assholes on purpose. So thanks for making me feel like a customer. Thanks for taking my money, asshole.
Hello, and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is a very special episode. I'm calling this one The Big Scream, and the reason I'm calling it that is because this is one of our topic shows, and the topic in question is about the problems that I and other people have seeing movies in the theater, and to join me in this conversation is my pal, Frankie Vitarello. Hi, Frankie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very thrilled to have you here. Now, of course,
honor and a pleasure.
Well, thank you.
I'm not sure if it's more of an honor or a pleasure. I'm going to go with a pleasure.
Hopefully so. We'll find out as the show rolls on. I want to explain to everybody why Frankie's here in question, because a couple of weeks ago, I went to go see Captain Marvel in the theater. I see all the Marvel movies in the theater, and I went to see Captain Marvel. And I'll get into the details of it shortly. I had the single worst movie-going experience I have ever had seeing Captain Marvel. Had nothing to do with the movie, liked the movie, but the people in the theater, especially one particular person, made it the worst experience I've ever had. And so I mentioned that on Facebook, and then, you know, Frankie, you gave me this response, and it was very, very long and very thought out. Had about
TL/DR.
In this case, it actually was I didn't read. I read the whole thing. But anyway, I really appreciated the thoughtfulness of your response, the fact you were actually gave me a little bit of pushback on some of my reactions, which I appreciated. And I started I was reading it on my phone, and I started to write back. And then I realized that there were so many things about your response that I wanted to comment on that I was like, well, let's just do this on the show. It'll be more fun just to have kind of a conversation, because I wanted to be able to make sure I sort of addressed everything that you said on this topic. So and we'll get into your history with the movie theaters and how your experiences, what you know about this stuff. But I do want to mention to everybody what happened in Captain Marvel. So I saw this at the Cinemark in Somerdale, New Jersey, and it was a Saturday afternoon. It was the first Saturday, and I'm sitting there in this front row, and it's like the balcony seating, so there's nobody in front of us because it's like a big drop-off, right? So a couple seats over to my left is a woman with three small children, and the minute the movie actually started, after the trailers, but when the movie itself started, she pulls out her phone. And I'm like, all right, okay. I mean, there was a half an hour of commercials that she could have done it during, and it wouldn't have bothered me. She waits till the actual movie to start, but I'm like, okay, all right, you know, whatever. And then this woman proceeded to have her phone out through the entire run of the film. And that is not a euphemism. That is literal. She had her phone out for 2 hours straight. How she didn't run out of a battery, I don't know. But during the course of this movie, she continued to scroll. She continued to text. She actually took a photo of her kids watching the movie, which they rarely did. She even took a phone call at one point. On top of that, she let her three children run around the theater like it was a Chuck E. Cheese, and they had pixie sticks shoved up their noses. They ran up and down the aisles. They ran in front of me. They ran up behind me. At one point, someone a couple rows back leaned over to this woman and said something about her kids. She completely ignored them. Mm-hmm. And there was a point where I considered getting up and getting somebody and saying, please, you know, and then – I don't know. I didn't, because I didn't want to miss the movie. I mean, this is the first time I'm seeing this movie. And I will say, at a certain point, I got so distracted by what she was doing that I almost regarded it as performance art. I was like, okay, I just want to see how bad this woman gets, because this is now the worst experience I've ever had. So I want to see. And it was. And then the minute the movie ended, she and her two of the three kids bolted out of their chairs, left the third kid behind. Stay away.
Never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again, unfortunately. No, he was not sold into movie theater slavery. And so I left that, and I went on Twitter, and I tweeted at Cinemark, mm-hmm. and I went into this whole, wrote this tweet storm. They never responded, but it did get a lot of responses from other people. And so you wrote a response on Facebook about it. And so
sure. I'm, do you want to recap my response?
Why don't you go through how you responded to me?
Well, it's been a couple weeks since I wrote it. I'll try and remember what I said, because it hasn't changed in my mind,
right.
Based on how you've explained your experience. Before I give my response, why don't you do you want me to talk about my background in theater
absolutely.
Management?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I was for 8 years a manager at an AMC theater, the AMC theaters in Clifton Commons, which made the news recently as one of the theaters that Brie Larson happened to appear at during the premiere weekend of Captain Marvel.
Awesome.
And it was ironically an evening that our good friend John Trumbull decided not to go to that theater, which was his regular Saturday afternoon opening weekend Marvel movie theater of choice. So he lost out there. But it's a theater in Clifton, New Jersey, and as I was working my way through my bachelor's degree in fine art, I needed a flexible job that could afford me free evenings or mornings or weekends to do my studio art classes, but also, pay the bills, pay my college bills, pay my rent, all that great stuff that, you have a 9 to 5 4. So I fell into that job as a standard employee, and then my manager quickly realized that I was managerial material based on my age and my experience, my prior experience. They said, you're way overqualified to just be shoveling popcorn and sweeping up theaters. You should be in charge of some of these kids. And I said, yeah, I should. So let's do it. I became a regular day-to-day manager, and then I quickly moved into the presentation management role for the theater. So I was in charge of the presentation for 16 screens, which is the audio, video, the film, the whole theater experience. Basically, what you had a terrible experience at your Captain Marvel showing, that's would have been my job to make sure that that didn't happen.
Right.
So that being said, I've got a few years experience of these types of terrible, awful horror stories that, this one was specifically your worst experience ever. And unfortunately, this is just a daily way of life at the movies. It's unfortunate. It's like, the only equivalence I can make is, some dogs at the dog park are not socialized with other dogs, and you can tell as soon as they come through the gate, they're vicious, or they're terrified, or they just don't know how to act. Some people are not movie theater socialized throughout their lives. They don't get the proper training. Nobody ever teaches them. And those three kids are probably on their way to being the parent in the future.
I thought about that. I thought that she's teaching these three kids, this is how you behave in a movie theater.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's unfortunate. Some people don't see the theater going experience as high art, and that's fine. Some people don't even see it as a social experience where there are other people paying for entertainment that they need to pay any attention to whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But you always, as a theater goer, you always have options. You've got some in-theater options, and then you've got some get up and walk out of the theater options. And I don't mean leave, but that could be one.
Mm-hmm.
So what you didn't do is completely understandable. You did not get up and engage, right? So you said that another person in the theater engaged with this woman and made some kind of statement, and the woman ignored it.
Yep.
So that tells us what would have likely happened if you had engaged, possibly. And I understand, as both a moviegoer and somebody who has in a position of authority, like as a representative of the theater, walked into a theater and had to deal with disruptive people, I understand the possibility. It's like a total crapshoot as to whether or not that's going to turn into a confrontation and something that could even potentially be violent. We've seen it on the news. So the apprehension to not get up and engage in the theater is understandable. But I will say this. If your experience is like that important to you, if it's an opening night or opening afternoon, or whether your first time seeing a movie that you really care about and your experience is being traumatized, it's worth a shot. It's worth a shot to be as diplomatic and nice as possible about it and just say, hey, excuse me. You know, your kids are running around, or I'm trying to enjoy the film. I'm sitting right there and you're on your phone. Could you please maybe chill out or be quiet or whatever? Be as least passive aggressive as you possibly can, but also let them know you didn't do that, and that's fine. But if you had done it, there's a possibility that you could have cut that short. Now, let me ask you. Did you mention in your initial description on Facebook, I think you might have, that she was doing this kind of stuff during the commercials and the previews?
No, she wasn't.
Oh, okay.
She wasn't.
So
because that's what was, like, shocking. I was like, look, I can tolerate it during the commercial role because that's when people do it.
Yeah.
I still don't really do it, but that's fine. And even during the trailers, I'm kind of saying, all right. You're a lot of people don't regard trailers as part of the movie. I kind of, to me, if the lights are off, the show has started.
Sure.
But even then, okay. But she literally waited for the Marvel logo to come up.
That's interesting. That's really interesting because usually that kind of behavior presents itself.
Yes.
Like a symptom of a disease. You get it.
Right.
You get it really early. You can see it coming, like a cold sore. And you know not to go in for the kiss because, like, oh boy, this is we're already seeing problems now. Let's not try and steal the deal here. So okay, so she tricked you. She faked you out by being quiet during the previews. Okay, so that probably would have thrown me off too and made me say, okay, this person may potentially be dangerous. So let me not engage. Your next option would have been one that caused you to maybe miss a minute or two of the movie, but always remember, always, that the movie theater staff, the ushers, the managers, anybody that you can get your hands on when you walk out of that theater are being paid. It's their job to neutralize whatever kind of disturbance is going on in the theater. Now, they're not always effective, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but it's worth at least trying. It's worth at least getting out there and grabbing one and saying, hey, look, I'm having a terrible time with somebody in the theater with the kids, and they're running around and they're making a lot of noise, and they're really ruining my experience. And here's my advice to you for this in the future, or anybody listening: don't have the theater staff follow you in, like, arm in arm, like your buddies, back to the seat with you. And they should know this. Any effective theater usher will know, and hopefully they're trained this way, will know to let you go back to your seat and watch you from a distance, and then go in
right
to wherever you have hopefully pointed out beforehand. You know, point, let them
right,
know
right
that the person is a few seats to the left, to the right, behind me, whatever. So, you know, it's like you're not going in with the prison guard and snitching on the on the guy who shanked the other guy. You know, you right, want to sure make sure it doesn't look like you've gone out and you've been a tattletale, because, you know, you got to sit next to this person for the rest of the show. And
right,
they may
right
they may put it together, but at least it's not demonstrable. It's
right
not clear evidence that you've ratted them out for being an obnoxious talking jerk in the theater. So you didn't do that. That's another option. Now, your third option is to do what you did, is to tough it out for the whole screening, deal with the horrible experience, and it's, you know, there's really nothing you can do at that point if you're not going to engage and you're not going to go out and grab a theater employee or a manager. Then the third option, and this is 100%, I challenge anybody at any theater anywhere, whether it's a mom and pop independently operated theater or the biggest mega chains out there, as soon as the showing is over, you just walk your butt right to the guest services desk. You speak to whoever's there, whether it's a manager or a staff lead or just a regular employee. You say, "Hey, I was just at the Captain Marvel screening or whatever movie. I had a terrible experience the entire time. Someone was talking, being disruptive, ruined my whole experience. I'd like my money back." You're not going to find a theater employee anywhere that's going to challenge you on that. They're just going to take your ticket stub, give you your money back. Now, that doesn't necessarily wipe the whole experience clean. It doesn't make things better. It's a Band-Aid, but it, at the very least, do not, please, for your sake as a paying customer, don't pay for something that has an inherent experience of entertainment and enjoyment and peace and not being having to subject yourself to talking throughout a whole screening. Just don't do that and walk out having paid for that. Get your money back. And if they even challenge you on, you know, "Oh, I can't give you your money back," they're going to give you a pass to another mm-hmm show.
Right.
They're going to give you something. None of them are going to look at you like you have smoke coming out of your eyes, because I guarantee you, unless you are the first person at the first showing that day, they've already given somebody their money back or a pass earlier in the day. It's it happens. It's a reality of the business all day, every day. And I certainly don't want to train people to expect to do that every time something happens, but it's the only way that theaters can rectify that experience, is to compensate you either by returning the money that you paid for the experience or by allowing you to come back and see another movie at a later date.
Okay. Now, all right, I have two responses to this. Is, again, these are the things that occurred to me when I read what you wrote, and I wanted to respond to these two things. One, I have had bad experiences before, and I have left the theater and grabbed somebody, and every single time, and I mean every single time, the person had the usher has come in and glowered at the offending person.
Mm-hmm.
And told them to quiet down.
Yep.
Then the usher leaves and the person starts right over again. And it has accomplished absolutely nothing.
Okay.
So that is so frustrating, because it's
– Yeah, like, no, that's
– And I get it. I have worked service jobs like that. I've never worked in a movie theater, but yeah. I have worked similar jobs, and I know that these people are underpaid. They're often teenagers, you know, and again, in this culture, unfortunately, we live in a culture where you could probably, like, I hate to be, like, overly dramatic, but, I mean, there are crazy people out there. You could get friggin' shot.
Oh,
by
absolutely.
Somebody, you know, if this is England, you're not worried about it. But here, you really, that is something you have to worry about. And then the second thing is, I have actually gone to managers, like you have suggested, and I purposely don't ask for my money back because I don't want them to think that that's my goal. I don't really care about the money. I have this more sort of holistic goal in mind, which is like, look, I love coming to the movies and I want other people to enjoy this. And I am afraid that this experience is going to go the way of the dodo bird, that it's just eventually there will be no movie theaters anymore and we'll all just be screening things in our homes instantly because this experience is so effing miserable. And I'm sort of doing it as, look, I don't want my money back. I don't want a ticket. I don't want any of this. I'm not trying to get something out of you. I just want you to know that this is going on in your theater and you've got to address this or something because this is going to keep other people away.
Sure.
So yeah. That's why I never ask for my – I've done that in other businesses and their go-to is always, well, let me give you a free this. I'm like, no, I'm not looking for something free. I'm just telling you, you know, here's this thing going on. So that's kind of why I tend to avoid asking for my money back because I don't care about the money really.
On behalf of theater managers everywhere, we appreciate that attitude. Believe me, we appreciate it. But – and there's a big but. Unless you're dealing with an independently owned establishment,
okay,
sure. I can promise you that – even the general manager of that theater is not worried about – they're concerned about your issue. And it's – again, this is like Sisyphus rolling the boulder up the hill. Every time you correct one person who is causing a problem in the theater, the boulder rolls back down the hill. It's just the unfortunate reality of it. But that being said – none of the managers are concerned about the money out of the till or the free pass.
$9 or whatever,
in fact, as a manager at a major chain, I want to give you that money back because to me, that's not money out of my pocket. That's money out of the corporation's tub that they deserve to have lost for us not doing what we should have done. So it's in a way you speaking with your wallet and getting your money back because we failed and we didn't catch that person or we didn't remove that person from the theater or we didn't do something effective to make sure that your experience was fixed either before it happened or after it happened. So don't stress too much about the ethics of what you want from the theater versus, you know, getting your money back or just take it. You deserve it. You should have it back. We messed up. And I don't think you're going to find many people who work in the business that are going to tell you any different. It's at the end of the day, it's more important for us to know that you're going to – even if you take that money and you just – or take the pass and you come back for another show, it gives us an opportunity to try again. Like let's see if we can get you back in here, get you some free popcorn or a soda or something so we at least, you know, sit you down and you're set for another good movie-going experience. Now, back to your point about having gone and grabbed a manager and having brought them in and – they've stared down the offending party and wasn't effective. That's a tricky situation. Then you've got, this is where we need to look at possible solutions for escalation like that. Things that the theater industry doesn't have right now. Now you could go out a second time and you could say to a manager, look, you came in, you addressed this person for me. I'm at this point, I've missed 5 minutes of my movie. And this is not beyond the scope of reason that this kind of thing happens. I've gone in, I've dealt with people who are talking or being obnoxious or being disruptive. I've stared them down, or I've talked to them. I've told them they have to be quiet. They can't talk anymore. I've left. I've had the same patrons come out, or different patrons come out and say, "Hey, this person's, you know, disruptive." And I say, "Okay, it's that same theater, same person." And at that point, we have to go in and we actually have to remove the person. And that's a step up. That's a level of escalation that nobody likes having to deal with that, because we're not cops. And on the weekends and during the, you know, big movies and rowdy shows, and like, we oftentimes did have to take local police officers. We'd have to have local police officers on staff on the weekends, and we'd have to take them in with us when we had to remove somebody, just for safety, for everybody's safety. And when we remove somebody, even if they're being disruptive, we give them their money back and we ask them politely to leave.
Wow.
You know,
we're
not, you're not in a position to be punitive about what you're doing unless they get arrested, then they're not getting their money back.
Right.
But if they're being disruptive, we don't want to give those people a reason to, you know, to be angrier than they already are for being removed. I've gone in with cash in hand, ready to give it back to the person, so I don't have to give them the perp walk back to the counter to go in the till and get the money out. I've had to remove people and said, "Look, you're going to have to leave. Here's your money back, or as a pass or whatever for another showing on another day." It's complicated. It's a never ending struggle. It's a complex thing. For as simple as a job as it is, it really is complicated. But there may be solutions that the theater industry hasn't looked to yet, and I've got some ideas.
Well, I definitely wanted to get to that, because again, I always try and sort of take a positive take of, like, you know, we're going to get to that. Well, there are things that can be done to fix this. But one of the things I am curious about, and this is something that I think is worthy of doing in almost any argument you make, is that you do try and see other people's side of it, because it's so easy when you're not the one who has to do it to say, well, they should, you know, X company should just do this.
Sure.
Well, that's easy if you don't have to do it. I mean, I spend my formative years in comic book stores, and I overheard 1,000 conversations of comic book fans who have never set a single foot inside of a comic book publisher saying, you know what they should do? They should do a book starring my three favorite characters. Well, yeah, sure. You want that, but that's not, you know, that's someone else's job that has to sell that thing. It's easy for you to say it. You don't have to do it. And so I'm guessing is part of the reason that movie theaters are so reticent to throw people out is because they are being hit on every side at this point in the pocketbook. And so it's like they just can't really afford to lose customers, because movie studios are taking more money out of their pockets. The home video windows are shrinking. People's are getting bigger and bigger TVs at home. It's like they're getting hit from everything, and it's the idea of telling a paying customer leave seems like an anathema.
Well, you'd think that. You really would. But here's the reality of that scenario. The people who are seated in the theater and the people who pay the price of their ticket for admission, if you've never heard this before, let me school your listeners and you on the realities of the theater industry. The price of a ticket, I would estimate about 95% of that goes to the movie studios.
That's amazing. I didn't know it was that high.
Movie theaters, I would say, are, you know, we're looking at maybe a 400 percent markup on food products.
Sure, sure.
So really, it's a concession business. So the price of a ticket in and out the door, if the theater has a systemic problem with removing people that goes on for months and months and months and months throughout every calendar year, and no major theater chain is going to not be able to identify a problem like that and work to reverse it in some way, retraining, rehiring, clear cutting, like terminating employees and bringing in better, more enthusiastic ones and retraining them. I don't think the daily occurrences, the percentages of people that receive a refund are ever really tipping the scales on losses or putting a theater in the red. I think if anything, the things that really make any theater profit are behind the concession stand. So it's a logical thought that they want to keep every single customer in every single seat. Ideally, every theater would want to sell out every single show, but they know that's not how it happens, that there are weekends and opening nights and summers that do, or holiday seasons that do statistically high volume business. There are times of year where it's slower. There are days of the week where it's slower. There are times where the theater industry has looked to give people discounts and opportunities to come in on days where, you know, weekday Tuesdays, like $5 Tuesdays at AMC or whatnot, just to get people in the door. And getting the people in the door ultimately is all about selling them that popcorn that costs, you know, $2 for a 50-pound bag wholesale.
Right.
And they mark it up at a percentage that is, I mean, popcorn is like spinning hay into gold. It really is the backbone of the industry in terms of money making. So, yeah, I mean, giving out refunds hurts. And if it begins to show a pattern, then theater managers and they'll begin to observe that and diagnose that and work to correct that. But in the time that I was with AMC, it's usually just more of a visual indicator of like, okay, hey, why are we giving out so many passes on Saturday nights?
Okay, all right.
You know, it's like a red flag more than anything. It's not so much like, oh my God, we gave back, you know, $250 worth of tickets. It's more of, why is it happening at this point, that this time on this day, every week, our numbers are going up, our returns are, you know, passing people out, giving them free passes is going up on this day. So let's look to correct this problem. It's just an indicator for theater managers to look for a problem to fix. And like I wrote in my response, the theater business, it's a job that's attractive to people who have never had a job before, people who are, you know, not really enthusiastic about the possibility of upward momentum in the theater business. It's for kids. It's for kids who this is their first job. This is their summer job. This is a job that they got because there are really not many people that we turn away for the job of an usher or somebody to work the concession stand. It's not rocket science. It doesn't need a degree. It's just, hey, you want to work here? We're hiring. Come work here. And they get the job. And in the event that a theater employee is effective in any position, the unfortunate side effect of that, if you get a good usher, an usher who who does walk into the theaters and look for people who are talking, they get promoted. And they get promoted to a position of authority or a position of greater responsibility, which unfortunately takes them away from the thing that they're effective at
in a lot of cases. Right.
So they're responsible for taking the quality and the enthusiasm that they have in their job. And hopefully a good manager is going to put them somewhere where they are influencing the other ushers to be like them. They'll be a staff lead or a manager themselves. But, you know, ultimately you're taking them out of that position where they're good at what they're doing, and you're moving them to another position that it may not be as effective at going into the theater and stopping that woman and their three kids in your showing of Captain Marvel. The usher that may have been really good at that might have gotten promoted to manager last week, the week before you went to see Captain Marvel.
Right.
And now they're in the back room counting out money or making out a schedule instead of going theater to theater and looking out for the stuff that you're dealing with. So that's another unfortunate reality of the business, is that the good people, they move up and they move away from the little jobs that are the hard things to do.
I have tried to. It kind of reminds me. It's like when Captain Kirk got promoted to admiral. You know, it's like, well, you got him off the bridge. He wants to be on the bridge. He's better on the bridge.
That's exactly right.
I will say, like, one of the times that I had a really bad experience was a couple of years ago at this same theater, and they were showing a double bill of James Bond movies, 70s mm-hmm. Bond movies, and there was one guy just yammering on through the whole movie to his friend, getting his phone out, and I went and I got a manager, and I specifically said, I made 2 points, and I said, first of all, I said, look, I'm here, this movie that I'm watching, I literally have at home. I could watch, you know, I could watch at home, but I'm here. I'm paying the extra ticket price because you're offering this on a big screen and I want mm-hmm. to see it. And I always point out that when they were doing these classic series where they were showing older movies, again, all of which are basically a click away from my home theater setup, I bought concessions because I know that that's where they're making their money off me. I know that the AMC, that the Cinemark is not making any money off showing Jaws at 2 p.m. on a Sunday. They're making money off me buying the pretzel bites for $9.95. And I understand that. And that's partly why I do it. So I understand that. I do have a question, though, about I have noticed there was another theater around here as part of the Lowe's chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I flat out refuse to go to it anymore because for whatever reason, every single time I've seen a movie there, the crowds are out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to wonder, is that something where – that's something like endemic to that chain where the maybe the local theater, the people that run that theater just don't get the support from management, and so therefore the culture is just, well, it's just, you know, paint the town red, boys. It's all right because – It could really be crazy.
I mean, you'd have to go in if it was an AMC, and I believe Lowe's is owned by AMC, and some of the theaters they just never changed the branding over.
Oh wow, okay.
maybe because of the things that you're talking about, maybe they know that location is. Has one of those systemic problems of the location is just a traditionally rowdy theater, and they were like, look, let's not change the branding on the theater just yet until we can get the numbers up on it, or I don't know. I'm almost positive that AMC does own Lowe's, and that at some point they changed over the branding on the exteriors of almost all of the Lowe's locations, but there's always reasons. There might be a town ordinance where there can't be more than one AMC theater within like a 5-mile radius.
Okay.
For reasons of competition, there has to be the one needs to remain an alternate branding. It's all kinds of crazy stuff.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But as far as some theaters are just rough. Some theaters will never get out of that. You know, it's a bad place to go on a Saturday night, or, you know, if we're going to go there, let's only see a matinee because the crowds, the evening crowds or the weekend crowds are just rough. It's, you know, Clifton, New Jersey, where my theater was, it was peaceful on a weekday. It was easygoing on a Sunday morning, but Saturday nights you get the theaters being escapism and something that people can do on the weekend. Come out and they see a movie and they just act rough. It really is a challenge. That theater that you're talking about, your Lowe's, would you be able to identify if the surrounding towns are they
no.
somewhere where you wouldn't feel safe on a
no walk I would not no I would not say that I, I have to figure the worst experience I had there, and that's I stopped going at this point, was they were actually showing The Hateful Eight in 70mm.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is Quentin Tarantino wants to show this movie and in the old school roadshow presentation. And, and it was, it's the only theater that has a screen that big. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go, I'm going to pay the extra. And I brought someone. So it's like, I'm paying the extra, you know, like $7 a ticket to see this in 70mm.
Sure.
And I had a guy next to me with his phone out the whole time. And I remembered thinking to myself, you're paying extra to be here. Why are you bothering? And I have to figure that there is something about some theaters that present themselves as like the local hangout. And when something becomes the local hangout, it starts being perceived as no different than the mall or whatever, wherever the hell kids hang out. I can't pretend to know what that's like. But, I mean, I have to figure that it's not considered a theater anymore. It's just considered yet another place to congregate. And the idea that this is a place to be quiet is that's not a thing. It just doesn't occur to them.
I think you're never going to find a major movie theater chain that is going to have that kind of marketing messaging
come here and be quiet.
Come here and be quiet. Yeah, this is a library. They want to present to, you know, youth and people who are looking to have a good time and a fun time and a movie going experience, an exciting time. And you have your pre-roll before the movie starts that says, don't talk, don't text, keep your phones off, don't be rude. And I think in the past 20 years that they've gotten better with that messaging. And there's just kind of a wall they hit with how abrasive they can be with that message.
Right,
you can't step over that line where it becomes a little bit too authoritarian. Then you're almost inciting that kind of activity from your crowds.
Right. Cause it's a certain kind of person who takes it upon themselves to, you know, oh, I'm being told to be quiet, I'm going to be extra loud. You know,
sure.
We all know people like that.
Possibly. And then, you know, you've also got some people, like I said, in the beginning of my discussion on this, is that some people are just not socialized to a theater-going experience. They've probably never been to an actual live theater play where it's, you know, you're not supposed to interact with the people on stage unless it's like some kind of audience participation thing. But, you know, that lack of exposure carries over into movies, because the movie's never going to turn from the stage and tell you to shut up like an actor might. Hey, I'm acting up here, be quiet. The movie's never going to talk back to you. And if you don't have the usher in your face, you know, I was thinking about the kids, the little kids running around. If possibly you had gone out and grabbed an usher and they came in and the little kids saw their mom getting scolded by an usher, or if the usher had, you know, said to one of them, hey, you can't run up and down the aisle. Perhaps that's a missed opportunity. Think about the developing mind of a child being scolded in a public place by a stranger. That kind of thing carries a – I'm not saying you're going to emotionally traumatize a kid, but that's the kind of thing that stays with you.
Oh, well, then why do it if I'm not going to traumatize the kid? That's the whole point. I mean, Believe me, I wanted to push those kids over the railing at a certain point after they ran past me.
You may traumatize them, but there's also a likelihood that you're planting a seed, a psychological seed, that they may be so turned off by an usher telling them to stop running, it may shake them to the point where they never want to do it again. Even if their mom takes them to the movies again and never gives them any guidance and never says, now you can't run up and down the aisles, they'll think about that that usher that embarrassed them or made them feel uncomfortable or whatever. Like, maybe that was a missed opportunity, and maybe at some point they will get that before it's too late, before they're like teenagers that are, you know, by nature anti-authoritarian, and they don't care if the man tells them to sit down and shut up.
Right.
Like when you're a little kid and like a person who's a sent by all accounts a police officer, you know, even though you're not a real cop, but you're the theater cop, comes in and says, hey, you can't do this. You know, that may set them on the right goal for life. You
scared
never know.
Straight.
You never know. Scared straight. Yep. it's like taking them to Litchfield Prison.
I wondered as I sat there and watched this woman look at her phone, and I glowered at her and tried to get her to make eye contact, but I never could.
Yeah.
Is like, I mean, you're like, why not just take these kids to the park? It's free. I mean, you've probably dropped $50 to let them run around. Like, why not just go somewhere where this is free and you've saved all that money?
Heated or air conditioned.
It seemed like an enormous amount of money to drop to just let your kids run around and pretend that there is not a movie that's being projected on a screen. But I do want to kind of pivot a little bit about to like, okay, what do you feel like can be done, even big and small, to make it better? Is there anything that can be done, do you think?
Well, I have some ideas. And if AMC, if you're listening, what's today's date? Let's make sure this is copyrighted. so that way I get paid if they ever institute this. Now, AMC has a pretty good user app for phones. And it would be kind of counterpose to what they say about don't take out your phone and use your phone during the movie. However, with assigned seating, the way it is now, if you are using your AMC app or you're using your credit card or your Stubbs card, which is tied in to your app and everything is all connected, and they know what seat you're sitting in and your phone has GPS and can globally position you in the theater so it can't be abused, so you can't just sit at home and push a button, they should have something on the app where you, if you're watching Captain Marvel and you're sitting in that seat, row J, seat 10, and the woman behind you in row X, seat 4, has her kids running around, if you could take out your phone, open your AMC app discreetly, tap a button that says, I'm having an in-theater disturbance, and you don't have to type in any other information because it already knows what showtime you've paid for your ticket, it knows what house you're in, it knows where you are. Like I said, it double checks to make sure that you're actually in the theater before it sends an alert to the ushers on staff. That would be a cool thing, I think, for you to not have your experience ruined any further than it already is. So you don't have to get up and go out and grab somebody and talk to a manager and give them a full description. Maybe it has a few indicators on the app. You can say in theater disturbance. You can tap maybe a quadrant of the theater where it's happening, if not exactly where it's happening, and say, please send somebody in right now, and boom, hit a button, put your phone away, and then maybe it buzzes or vibrates when an usher comes into the theater to let you know it's being dealt with, and hopefully it gets dealt with. That I fantasize about something like that every time I see a movie and I have a similar experience. Now, I'm predisposed myself to not want to get up either. The same thing. I don't want to miss the movie. I've been on the other side of the thing. I know that it's typically effective to get up and stop the stuff from happening. Like I know there's sitting it out and just dealing with it through the whole theater through the whole showing is infuriating, and you wind up, you know, having your experience completely ruined. And it's not, you know, even if you get your money back or you get a pass, it's like this didn't fix my experience. This is just a Band-Aid, and I just have to hope that my next time I go to the theater, I have a better experience. That's the only thing. So that's my thought. I would love to see AMC or some other company roll something out like that. So when you are having, or it could be if there's something wrong with the presentation on the screen. Now I was managing theaters pre-digital presentation for the most part.
Right.
There was a very, very small amount of digital presentation going on between 2000 and 2008. It really went full on the few years after I left, where the full digital transition happened and 35 millimeter projectors and film were pretty much gone. So back when I was managing, there would constantly be issues with 35 millimeter film.
Of course, right. You're dealing with actual reels of film.
Yep. So if there was something going on with the projectors, if the film was out of frame, if there was a scratch on the film, if the projector bulb went out, anything like that, it could be used for that too. Like, hey, there's a presentation problem. You hit a button. Somebody runs up to the projection booth that, you know, if they don't already have a staff member in that area, and then goes and fixes it. So that way it's not walking out, grabbing an usher, trying to explain to the usher what's going on. They grab the walkie talkie. They walkie over to the presentation people, and then they have to go up and deal with it. If it's an app that can set off an alarm for people who have, they're in a position to do something about it, that would be cool. I would love that. That's my thoughts.
I like that idea a lot, because I really think that human behavior-wise, part of the thing that allows crowds to just get out of hand is the feeling that there is sort of no one in charge, even if it's someone nominally in charge, like some 17-year-old in a vest with a broom. But it's like when – I think that I really do like the idea that even if you could hit a button – and someone comes in, and even if they can't necessarily pinpoint what the problem is, because let's say the offender realizes that an usher has come in and he puts his phone in his pocket, just mm-hmm. seeing somebody come in indicates that this theater does care about what's going on. It's when I think especially when I've been to movies where they are digitally projected and something has gone wrong, and it's a good 5, 6, 7 minutes into the film mm-hmm. until somebody notices, that really seems to tell the patrons, there's nobody at the tiller here. This is all being done by robots, and it really doesn't matter what you do because there's no human watching. And as we all know, if you know a human is watching, it does change your behavior. It just absolutely does.
Yeah, when I was in charge of presentation, like I said, it was an all 35 millimeter, 16 screens running simultaneously, 35 millimeter prints, and the booth itself, the projection booth at Clifton, was one continuous booth that was about a football field and a half long. So wow. there were no walls between any of the projectors. All 16 projectors were pretty much visible from a straight shot. If you stood on one end of the theater projection booth and looked down, you could see all the way to the end. So if something was going on with one of the projectors, something catastrophic, you could definitely tell. And there should have always been one projectionist on staff to be manning all of that. And if there was nothing going on upstairs, they should have been walking the floor and going in and out of theaters and checking if the video and the sound was acceptable there. And then back to your statement you just made, that nobody running the show, it looks like there's nobody watching. For a movie theater, it's there. You're not always going to have the manpower to have an usher in every single theater
at
every single day. But ideally, you want enough people on staff to be patrolling. They should be going in and out of the theaters and doing theater checks at least once per show. So if you're not seeing that happening, there's one of two things happening. Either it's not happening, which is not good, and no theater should not be doing checks for disruptive behavior or something wrong with the presentation, or it's happening and you're just not noticing it because you're caught up in the movie. Like, there may be an usher popping in and you just can't see them in the dark. I can attest to how stealthy they can actually be. And they don't, it's not like the 1950s with the giant, where they walk in with a giant mag light and like do a sweep of the theater.
Right. It's got the white gloves on anymore. Right.
So they're pretty quiet. They come in and they look around, and sometimes you won't even notice that they're there. And unfortunately, sometimes it happens so fast that they don't catch if there is something going on. They don't linger, and sometimes they don't have the time to linger as long as they could or should. But it goes back to that. It's always going to be a struggle on the level of Dante's Inferno, where you're just, no matter how well you ever can effectively manage a theater, the patrons will always outnumber your staff. It's always going to be more people than you can handle on any given day. And it's just a constant challenge to maintain peace and sanity and keep everybody flowing. We had foot traffic of approximately 3 million plus patrons a year at Clifton, in and out of the building. And it's mind-boggling to think about just the sheer volume of people. And the theaters are like 300 seat theaters. So to have that many people in and out every 3 hours in a room sometimes is just, I don't know. You gotta work in the business for a few years and really see it at peak operations to be awed by it. I can't imagine working at like a football stadium or something that can seat 100,000 people. You know, the sheer number of people that come in and out, the things that can occur, just the chaos factor, if I was Jeff Goldblum, it just has a way. Just this crazy stuff that can happen that you just never expect. I've got stories, man.
That's for another episode. Before we kind of wrap up, I do want to ask you, and this is a little further afield than the sort of the thrust of our episode here.
Sure.
I do want to ask you, do you think that movie theaters, because as we know, they are getting buffeted by Netflix, and they are getting hit by, people can now get televisions that are, you know, as practically as big as some smaller movie screens, and they're getting more and more. Do you think that movie theaters will always be around, or do you think that there is a point where eventually people will it'll just be all beamed into your home for $49.99, and you'll get Avengers 19 is out. Well, guess what? I'm going home and I'm going to pay that premium price, and is this going to have it beamed into my house? I'm not going to bother to go outside anymore.
Well, this has been a discussion that I think people have been having in the industry since the advent of cable television, probably, or even the advent of broadcast television. I think theater chain owners, you know,
were
think
terrified.
Back to like Boardwalk Empire era, like Nucky Thompson, like, ah, oh, man, when these people get their television boxes in their house, they're not going to come out to the picture shows anymore. it's old. There's always going to be a struggle of and a pushback of like, well, there's a reason above and beyond why people go to the movies other than just seeing the latest movies. It is an experience that cannot be replicated
right.
at home, because your home is where you hang your hat. You can watch the newest movies, even if you're pirating Avengers Endgame the day that it comes out, and you're going to steal it from some torrent online and watch it the day that it comes out. It is not going to be the same experience as driving to the theater or walking to the theater, or however you get your butt to that theater, paying for the popcorn, paying for the soda, sitting in those seats, whether it's the full blown leather recliners that they have now, or the D-Box with the rumble and the surround audio right in the seat, or the old creaky standard folding movie theater chair. Even that is not really replicatable to the general public at home. People, much like how people are nostalgic for their vinyl records and their, you know, and the things that they grew up listening to or enjoying from an entertainment perspective, people will always remember going to the movies as a kid, and they're training their kids the same way. It's an experience above all other things. It's not truly about the movie. It's about the experience. And I don't think that that will ever go away, no matter how good the home experience gets in terms of clarity. You get your 4K TVs, you get your big 65-inch screens at an affordable price. That's great. But you're never going to get away from people wanting to get away from their homes to escape their day-to-day lives, their work, their stresses, their strains. Movies is a business that increases in profitability and traffic during depression, financial depressions, during wars, during stressful periods in society. It's
only we were going through one of those right now.
You know, I'm sure the past 10 years of stresses in people's lives have been in some way comforted, blanketed by the wonderful things that Kevin Feige and the Marvel Cinematic Universe have been doing. They've been saving people from just losing their minds with all the crap that goes on in the world. But you know, I don't think the theater industry, it is a business that is built to survive even the worst times. And with every new technological improvement of the home theater experience, the theater industry has braced itself and done whatever it could to make the theater going experience just a little bit better. There was those 10 years of 3D. I'm so glad that did not really become the standard. I mean, it still exists. There's still a lot of 3D showings out there, but man, I was really worried that like every single movie up to and including like, you know, your Merchant Ivory, British dramas were going to be in 3D. Like, I'm so sick of putting these glasses on for every single movie, especially when they don't have any cool things that pop out.
Right. The Downton Abbey movie in 3D. Man. Oh boy.
Bates in 3D and just comes out and he walks with his cane right in my face.
It's like I was there.
Yeah. I don't think that it's the movie theater experience is going to go away. And I think there's always a fear and there's always a concern that it's going to be irreparably harmed by the bad experiences or the better experiences at home. But I think that, again, it's just, you know, people keep coming. They keep leaving their homes to go to the movies because it's just, it's something to do. And Hollywood keeps figuring out ways to keep us coming, and the theater industry has made some good advances. I like the improvements that they've made in the past decade. I think the full digital transition was good. I know there are some people out there that are very anti-digital. They like the 35 millimeter. They like the traditional prints. There's a lot of pushback on, like, oh, you know, I don't like the digital. I can tell when there's a lot of movement. It doesn't look the same as film. But man, for somebody who worked with 35 millimeter film for almost 10 years, I have the problem of I cannot watch a 35 millimeter print without seeing every single imperfection on it, because I was trained to watch for that stuff like a hawk. Like any kind of movement or flutter or dirt or scratch or
oh, there's
audio
the dot.
Problems. Oh my God. I can see all of that stuff like in my sleep. I wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night, like, oh, there's a scratch on the film. Oh wait, 35 millimeter film doesn't exist anymore. I go back to sleep. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
and
I also like the
big recliner seats in the theaters now that they're doing. I like the higher end dine-in theaters. They're giving you reasons. They're giving you reasons to come out.
Oh, I mean, I am in love with reserve seating. I basically will not go to a movie that I can't do a reserve seat. I look at waiting in line to get a seat as like it's the dark ages at this
point.
I'm just not doing it.
And that was scary to a lot of people when they rolled out reserved seating. They're like, what do you mean reserved seating? You mean I have to pick a seat? That's crazy.
I love it.
It's great.
Yeah, it's funny, kind of going back on what you were just talking about, is that today a coworker noticed my desktop wallpaper is the Jaws poster. And they asked me something about Jaws, and they said, ask me how many times I've seen it, and yada, yada. And I literally said that even though I own Jaws on DVD and it's on Netflix, if AMC showed it every other month, I'd go. I'd still go. I'd still get in my car. I'd drive over to the theater. I'd pay $20 for my food or whatever it is, and I'd sit and watch it, even though, you know, I could do it with the click of a button at home, but because the experience is just not the same.
It's not and never will be. And you know, I see those people that have home theaters that actually have movie theater seats and curtains on the wall and stuff. And
popcorn poppers.
I bet those people – they sit in those things a couple times a year, and they're like, I want to go to the real movies. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you those people that have those things in their home are sick of them. It's not the same. It's not the same.
I would love to find out if I would get sick of it. But so I had one last thing that I wanted to end on, and this was my goal was to end the show on a positive note because I try and do it. But I feel like we've already done that, actually, because you've advocated some ways to improve things, and you're very erudite way of explaining things, and I'm very, very happy about that.
Oh,
so we're already ending the show on an up note. But let me ask, I
need to go to Downton Abbey now.
Exactly. But I will ask this anyway. So in 2019, Frankie, is there one particular movie that you are dying to not just see, but dying to see in the theater? Maybe that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the kind of movie that you need to see in the theater.
Sure.
It could just be a small indie drama. But is there something that you're like, man, I just can't wait till that hits movie screen so I can go see it?
You know, I hate to have the obvious answer.
Oh no, I think we're gonna have the same answer as you then.
Man, I really hate to just be so obvious, but it's 10 years in the making. I mean, how can anybody at this point, any human being on this planet, not be chomping at the bit and checking their computers every day for when those damn tickets go on sale for Endgame?
Yeah,
that's
my same answer.
I cannot wait. I mean, we will never, ever in our lifetime have such a successful, and I'm not just talking about financially successful, I am talking about successful from a conceptual standpoint.
Yep.
To execution and casting and writing and directing.
Scheduling.
And books, get everything. And even the ancillary stuff like the TV projects and the Netflix stuff that is all canceled now. But all of that, just to coordinate all of that and in every way have all of those all be either successful on like a strong B minus. That, like, I think at the lowest point of the Marvel Universe, you're not going to find anything that's a universal disappointment. Even the stuff that is not great is still so watchable. You know, you'll find people that are like, oh yeah, like Thor Dark World and Iron Man 3, those are some stinkers. But if you sit them down and you actually watch them, they're not heinous. They're just good.
I'll take them over a lot of other comic book movies any day of the week. As dull as they are, yeah, I'll take them over, you know, Catwoman or whatever.
Yeah. So. Even if you just look at them in context as a part of continuity, it's still fantastic. And Endgame is, I mean, the announcement that it's 3 hours.
Oh my God, I was so excited when I heard that.
I was disappointed that it wasn't 4 hours. Yeah. I want more. I don't want it to end. I want, you know, people are, oh, well, you know, what if they put an intermission? Like, I'm not getting up from my, I'm not moving. I don't care. I don't care what they do. They just give me more, man. It's going to be so bittersweet to see so many of the key players finishing up their contracts and moving on, and who knows how much, if any, we're going to get of those performers, the Robert Downey Jr.'s and the Chris Evans and the everybody else. It's going to be, I don't know. Paul Rudd's going to save us all. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I have the same answer. I mean, I saw Infinity War, of course, when it came out, and I liked it a lot when I saw it. But then when it came to Netflix, I just started putting it on in the background, and I went from really liking it to falling completely in love with it. And I'm like, this thing is the live-action equivalent of a Marvel annual.
Sure.
All it needs is a hostess ad stuck in the middle of it and a bullpen bulletin. You know, I mean, that's really all it needs. And so that's what Endgame, to me, all the things that you just said and the fact that this is the culmination of that. And, yeah, I know a lot of people groaned when they said it's Endgame is 3 hours, but I went, oh, boy. You know, like, give it to me. If I like this movie as much as I liked Infinity War, I am going to love every friggin' second of the 3 hours. And there is something to seeing it on the weekend. And, you know, I will admit part of my experience of enjoying a movie is the minute it comes out and then, like, there are podcasts about it that talk about it and I can, like, sort of, you know, immerse myself in it. I did that with Us just a week ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
the minute
that
came out, I went and sort of, you know, binged on all these theories and stuff like that. And I liked being part of that conversation in the time that it's happening. And, of course, that's not – that you can't have that if you're waiting 3 months for it to come to – iTunes. It is not exactly the same thing.
Yeah, so. It's amazing. It's also amazing if you think about it that the Russo brothers they're essentially, you know, they split one story up and are, I mean, which is not uncommon. We've gotten a lot
of
two-part movie stories, but those have almost all of those instances have been based on novels that, you know, are over 1,000 pages and they have to break it up just because there's so much content. Now, I know Infinity War was a graphic novel. It's a series of comics that spanned a long story, but these are not really adapted in a way that that, you know, if they diverge so much from what the comic book.
It's like Game of Thrones now. It's charting its own course. Yeah.
So this is one of the few instances that we've gotten a two-part, one-story movie a year apart is not based on something that's already too long. They've just gone full tilt with giving us so much. They probably could have, if they were pressured, they probably could have given us one movie to deal with all this, but I'm so glad that they didn't. The Russos are just, I mean, they can do no wrong, and I hope they don't. I hope
yeah, don't tempt fate, Frankie. Come on.
I know. Well, you, don't blame me if it turns out horrible, but
we'll get you back on the show. What? Explain yourself.
What did I do? Oh, I'm so sorry.
For God's sake. So, well, anyway, okay. I think we should wrap it up here.
Yep.
Frankie, this was an extraordinary conversation. I had so much fun talking to you about this. And like I said, I love the movies. Everybody knows I love the movies. I've been seeing movies since I was 5 years old. My parents took me to see The Omen. I never tire of mentioning that.
It's because you have that tattoo.
That's true, yeah.
On the back of your neck.
I did have that babysitter. Anyway, I love the movies. That's why I do this show. I love watching movies at home. I love seeing movies in the theater. And I'm always trying to, you know, if there's a way to preserve this thing for future generations, maybe not those three little brats I saw running around, but for other people, then I'm interested in that. So, and I really appreciate, A, that you gave me such a thoughtful and reasoned response. I appreciate it, because it was like you were taking what I said seriously as opposed to just kind of like a quick – because, of course, Facebook invites the quick hit, you know, the quick boom, boom, and I'm out. No, you actually, you know, gave me this long thing, and I really appreciate it. And I appreciate even more you taking the time out of your day to come and talk to me.
You know, 9 times out of 10, it's the opposite reaction when I respond to anything for anybody. It's like, why are you just shut up? My God, you just so much talking.
Well, I'm like that way with Trumbull, but I really appreciated it. I really appreciated response. And like I said, I just thank you so much for coming on the show. This has really been fun.
Yeah, man. It was a pleasure and an honor, and maybe it was more of an honor.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, again, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. I want you to stay tuned, and we're going to play some podcast promos. And then on the other side, I'm going to have a couple of final thoughts. So stay tuned.
Nerdflix and Chill is a podcast that discusses your favorite topics from the world of the nerdy. From Game of Thrones to Star Wars and beyond, Nerdflix and Chill is your place for show recaps, film reviews, and general conversations about all things geek. Be sure to check us out on Stitcher and on iTunes, where you can subscribe and leave us reviews. You can also follow us on Twitter at NerdFlixChill and let us know your opinions, because we want to hear from you. Thank you, and may the Force be with you, because the night is dark and full of terrors.
Lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello. I'm the manager of this theater. At this very moment, I can see you out there. I know exactly what you're doing. I'm watching your reactions, keeping track of what candy sells best, and memorizing seat locations of the weirdos who are doing sick things to their neighbors. I put this in myself. Oh, everything seems to be... The guy in the green jacket in the back row! Get on his ass there! That's disgusting! Get him out! Get leave the two girls. They're fine. Oh, that is two of them. I try to keep a clean movie house here as much as possible. None of this derelicts drooling and groping in the back row shit at one of my theaters. Mm-mm.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm back with just a couple of quick thoughts as we're wrapping up here. I have decided that after this episode of the Film and Water podcast, I'm going to put the show back on hiatus, because we're going to make space for MASHcast. MASHcast is going to return on Wednesday, April 24th. I've been dying to get to season 2 of that show, and I've always sort of decided that Film and Water and MASHcast will sort of trade time, this time slot. So I'll do this show at one point, and then MASHcast at another point, and then back and forth. So I decided that this one is going to be the last film in water for a little while. And then, like I said, MASHcast is going to come back, and I will do season two and complete that. And then at that point, Film in Water will come back. But in the meantime, of course, there will be special episodes here and there. There is, I cannot imagine that we, as a network, are not at some point going to do an episode about Avengers Endgame. As Frankie and I talked about, we are both super, super excited for that movie. And I know everybody at the network has varying levels of excitement. I'm probably the most excited about it. Like I said, I can't imagine that we're not going to have some sort of network-wide review of that. So at the very least, we'll be talking about that. And of course, there are other movies coming out this year that I probably want to talk about. So I don't think even during MASHcast's season two run, I don't think Film and Water will be gone completely. I'll be doing special episodes here and there. I do want to thank all my guests for this run of shows. I will say on a personal front, Film and Water, of all my shows that I do, I am probably the most critical of Film and Water, because I feel as though that when there's an episode that's not great, it's my fault. It's because maybe I haven't brought enough intellectual rigor to the discussion, or I don't know the film as well as I should. And so there are times where I kind of come away from Film and Water feeling a little disappointed, because I don't feel like I did the movie justice or my guest justice. But I will say, I think in this last bunch of shows that I did, they all came out very, very well. And all credit goes to my guests. I lined up a really great collection of guests, so I have to thank them all for coming on. And so I want to thank, by name, Dan Budnick, of course, he appeared twice, Kim Cavill, Luke Dobb, Sarah Jane, Josh Karp, Era Entrada Kelly, Michael Lane, Nicholas Prom, Max Romero, Emily Scott, Frankie Vitrello, of course, and Laura Von Holt. They all were extraordinarily fun to talk to, and I was very, very proud of the shows. And I also was very proud of the diversity of films that we covered. I mean, in just the span of 12 episodes, I covered a softcore adult film, a family classic, kind of a gentle fantasy, an Albert Brooks film, a movie serial, an 80s musical, the final film of Orson Welles, an obscure kind of Robert Altman comedy, fantasy, a musical based on a comic strip. I mean, it was a much more diverse lineup than I have typically managed to tackle on Film and Water. So I'm very, very happy about that. And I hope to continue that, when Film and Water comes back, I will get to do more and more diverse films. I really enjoy that. My taste of movies are pretty, pretty wide, to quote Rob Gordon, except for German or silent. And I like being able to sort of have the show cover, all the genres out there that there are to talk about. So again, thanks to all my guests for coming on. I really appreciate you all taking the time to talk to me about a particular favorite movie. And I have to thank you all for listening. I'm really, really happy that that people are excited about when a new episode comes out. And I thank everybody who has left comments on the website, which is, of course, FireAndWaterPodcast.com. So I guess that is going to do it for this run of the Film and Water podcast. But like I said, the show will be back before you know it. And in the meantime, in just 2 weeks, will be the return of MASHcast, tackling season two of that show. So I guess that is going to do it for now. And so until the Film and Water returns, we'll see you at the movies. And that's a wrap.
Actually, when I was a little younger, there was another journey I wanted to make. It was a religious one. I wanted to be a priest. However, I soon realized that my real vocation, my real calling, was the movies. I didn't really see a conflict between the church and the movies, the sacred and the profane. Obviously, there are major differences, but I could also see great similarities between a church and a movie house. Both are places for people to come together and share a common experience. And I believe there's a spirituality in films, even if it's not one which can supplant faith. I find that over the years, many films address themselves to the spiritual side of man's nature. From Griffith's film Intolerance, to John Ford's The Grapes of Wrath, to Hitchcock's Vertigo, to Kubrick's 2001, and so many more. It's as if movies answered an ancient quest for the common unconscious. They fulfill a spiritual need that people have to share a common memory.